Peace and love, y'all. It's your girl, Melanie Charles, aka D Flower. And I'm with my favorite co-host,
Uni Mo, aka Uni Mojica. Maybe I should say Uni Mojica, aka Uni Mo.
Yes. How you feeling, Uni?
I'm feeling all right. You know, life be life in sometimes, but I'm here. I'm grateful, blessed, and happy to see your beautiful face.
I'm sad for the people that they don't get to see you because the curls are popping right now. Like, it's giving me life. It's giving me life. So thank you for that. I'm excited because I'm in LA right now in the middle of tour. And this is the first time that I was able to get my mobile setup set. So I'm feeling, professional and stuff.
You know, we trying to be professional out here.
You know, like last week, two weeks ago, you definitely came for me and you were like, Mel, are you serious about this podcast?
I know.
And I'm like, yes, Uni. You're like, then we need to do this every week. And I was like, Jesus, Uni's right. So I was like, let me get my mobile set up so I don't have no excuses for Miss Uni Mo.
Listen, and then karma came back around on me. It was like, Uni.
But, you know, this is all part of the process. And this is really teaching me, you know, how like consistency is important. But like also life things happen. Mm-hmm. And you got to be graceful and just move with the flow. So thank you. You know, I really appreciate you being my partner in crime in this MJTA podcast journey.
I appreciate
journey.
You. And I, on behalf of all of MJTA listeners, we all want to wish you a happy birthday, Mel.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, guys.
All your fans, lovers, and friends, happy birthday, Mel. MC season.
Thank you so much. It feels really good to be alive another year. I'm very grateful. I have more clarity about the things I want to do in my life. And I'm just really excited about what the future holds. But I'm also like, okay, I'm officially a grown woman. Like officially, like nobody could tell me anything. Like, all right, I'll tell you guys, I'm 36 years old. Okay. I'll tell you, you know, I never really say my age, but I'm 36. You know what I mean? People are like, you've been grown, but I'm like, I'm Haitian. And like, Haitian people are never grown. You're always a child. You know what I mean? But I feel like I'm ready to release that. And like, I'm really excited to move in the world as like in my divine feminine, in my strength and my confidence in my full adulthood.
Amen. Amen.
You know? Ooh. Well,
I was going to say, what is our generation called? Are we millennials or Gen Zs? We're millennials, right?
We're millennials. Gen Z is after us, right? Or are we Gen Z?
No, we're millennials.
We're millennials. Yeah. Are you saying that that's really a millennial thing of like feel like delayed feeling of like full adulthood?
Mm-hmm. We're struggling with that. Because we're coming into the now we're stepping into us being the elder statesmen in some senses. In our mid-30s, mm-hmm. going into 40, mm-hmm. and all of that. So it's definitely something that our generation right now is grappling with because we were the younger ones. And now we're not.
But also I wonder if it's like our generation was like easy education, but like economy was bad. And so kids stayed home longer than generations before. And so mm-hmm. we weren't as like out of the nest as early.
It's a great point.
Mm-hmm. You know, because the economy was so bad, we couldn't afford to, you know, so it's just like, just stay home.
Yeah, it was easy for our parents and grandparents to buy property and all that.
Right, exactly. So
it's easy now.
A curse and a blessing. All right. Well, I don't want to wait any longer. I'm really excited for this episode. We have an amazing special guest, an incredible artist, a beautiful human being, a healer, a nurturer, an amazing wife and partner, an amazing friend. Her artist name is Lady Moon, and she fronts a really dope band called Lady Moon and the Eclipse. And I'm just really excited to have Lady Moon in the room. Yes!
Woo! How lucky and blessed we are.
Hey.
So do I have permission to say your government name, or can I just call you later? Okay. Because I know your government name. Gunda Badilla.
Yeah.
Gunda, how you feeling today?
I'm feeling good. My voice is a little on the tired side. Even though I haven't really been using my voice, I think it's just like body fatigue.
Yeah.
It just like hits that area. But otherwise, I'm feeling great. I'm just like, you know, getting through the days.
Well, you probably have body fatigue because you've been traveling. You're settled in California, but you are in New York now because you're about to launch the second leg of tour, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Tell us about that. Like, what's going on right now in this moment in time?
Yeah, so right now in this moment in time, my sister, my twin, she just had a art exhibit at one of the venues we'll be stopping at on tour, the Hudson Opera House in Hudson, New York. And so I kind of came a little early to New York, to the East Coast, to support that. Nice. And that was a lot. That was a lot. Because my sister, she wanted me to table some of my herbal products. Because I also dabble in some alchemy.
Yes.
Some herbal alchemy. And so she wanted me to display that. And I was like, I have to make dream catchers because it's the eclipse season. And so that kind of like took all my energy preparing for that.
Yes.
So I'm really happy to have this week, because this week is going to be kind of my like relax and prep for tour week.
Yes.
So that's kind of what's happening right now. This is definitely a busy week for like, you know, doing things like this, like interviews with radios and you know, just getting people excited about this eclipse season.
Yes. So let's rewind a little bit for people who don't know, because I'm already excited to get into the meat of it. But Gunda, you come from an amazing creative family. And, you know, I don't know, how long have we known each other? What, like 6 years?
At least 10 years.
Is it really already?
Yes.
How do y'all meet?
I met you in 2013.
Oh my God. We met
like
because
it was like the summer of 2013.
You met Roger.
Your brother.
My brother. He was busking on the subway.
Yeah, I met him through your brother. Mm-hmm. He was like playing this, he was always playing the saxophone in Tribeca where I was working. And one day I was like, you're a great saxophone player. Like, you play so well. He was like, yeah, no, thank you so much. He was like, and I was like, yeah, I'm trying to put together a band, like, you know. And so we exchanged contacts through that, but it never turned out to be us working in the band together. It kind of became more of like a, it was like a sneaky kind of like romantic thing.
Ooh, okay, T, we're getting the tea. Wait.
Mel loves tea.
I love the tea. Wait, Uni, can you mute your mic? Because when you type, you could hear it when you type.
Oh my God. Okay. Huh? My bad.
When you're typing. Oh, no, that was for Uni. So yes, go ahead.
It never got serious, but it was always like, you know, he's attractive. I'm attractive. You know, we're musicians. And it was kind of like seeing something, but then it just never like really went anywhere. But I just always respected his musicality. And then he told me about you. And I was like, oh, that's who I need to be connecting with. Like, she is amazing. You had Melanie Charles in The Journey. And I was like, oh, that's so, that like, we have so much in common because I'm leading with the eclipse. And like, maybe we could do a show together. Like, just like, so.
That's beautiful.
Like, you were just like such a great, like, example. You were just such a great, just everything that I was like, you know, that's kind of what I want to be doing. Like, I want to have a band. I want to be touring. I want to be traveling. Your brother was like, oh, she's in Japan. Oh, she's in Japan. Aww. Like, this girl's going everywhere.
Wow.
So like, I just wanted to meet you. I remember so bad. And then we ended up meeting each other, and it was just like, that's what
and,
it was.
And we were locked in. Yeah. So I appreciate you meeting my brother. But really, I think the main intention of the universe was to bring us together, because throughout the years, we've collaborated in so many different ways. And I still want to go back and talk about your family, because I think that is such a huge part of like all of the amazing varieties of art and creations that you make. And I remember Gunda is an incredible braider, like hair person. Like, I don't even want to say braider, because I feel like you do art with the hair. It's more than just braiding. Hair art. And one of the times when you were, I remember when you would work on my hair and you would talk to me about your family and how you guys were basically like a traveling dance troupe. Like, please talk about that part of your life coming up.
Yeah. So my dad, he's from the Congo. He's Congolese, from the Republic region, in Brazzaville. Brazzaville was like, I guess, the city that he grew up in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when people think of the Congo, they think of the Democratic Republic, which more like, you know, the Belgian colonial territory, but he's more of like the French colonial territory, which is the Republic. And so so that's where he grew up in. And at the time when he was really young, he, you know, the colonizers were there, the missionaries were there.
Wow.
The schooling was just very hardcore for young people because they had really cruel punishments to keep them from speaking their language. And there were also punishments to keep them from practicing some of their traditions, including like dance traditions. But there was like an undercover group that saw my dad dancing in the streets because he like left school and he was 8 years old, and they recruited him into their troupe. That became the National Ballet of the Congo when it became independent. And when he went to Paris, he, you know, started his own ballet, Ballet Encodia. And my mom at the time was in college, and she was also a part of this African traditional dance group at Old Westbury. And so they were traveling around learning from other traditional troops from Africa. And that's how my parents met in Paris.
Oh my God.
And so they met each other, had kids, got married, all that stuff. And, you know, by the time I was like one, or right before I was born, they had started their own company. And so that's what I grew up in. So I grew up in their company that they created, that not too long after I was like, I was probably about 6 years old when they moved to the States with that company. And then after, you know, exploring, working with universities and college students and really touring with that, it became a family company, which was pretty intense growing up, because it was like, at a young age, we were kind of like needing to have the mentality of like business people, like professional performers to make money to sustain our family.
Yeah.
That's what it trickled down to. Like, it was no longer like they had dancers, you know, they had all this. It was kind of like,
you guys were the dancers.
Family. And, you know, that was kind of like that happened like around 97. So what happened was in 95, my dad had a manic episode. So yes, my dad is also manic bipolar. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he had a manic episode, which kind of, that kind of turned the path and created a new path for the family company being just family.
Okay.
Because, you know, this is all my parents knew. They just knew to be performers. That's how they always made their income. Mm-hmm. And my mom was also an educator on the side, but, you know, for my dad, like, this was his whole life. He didn't know any other way. So like, we were now, you know, trained to be performers, basically. Yeah. And so that's kind of like a little bit the history of like the family company. I have 10 brothers and sisters.
Wow.
We all grew up in this company. We all were part of it. When we moved to Hudson, New York in 97, it became just the seven of us that were, all the other ones were older.
Mm-hmm.
They had moved on to live their lives. They have a different mother. And so it was just the seven. So it was the seven, you know, just really committing to this family company. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I even though I've heard bits and pieces of this story, hearing you break it down and lay it out like that is just so beautiful, because I literally see how you've taken that sort of concept of family creation and business and like just like way of life. You've continued in that tradition with your Eclipse project, Lady Moon and the Eclipse, which is also a fusion of basically family plus added people. Like, have you ever thought like, okay, I'm gonna do this, you know, this is how dad and mom did it, like,
yeah,
this is how it is? Or did just organically you just find, wait a minute,
Well, actually, at first, in the beginning, so I was 20, I just turned 22 when I started Lady Mutiny Eclipse in a small little city upstate. This is also like before any kind of social media, like, you know, and this is a small city, meaning like, you know, upstate, there are not a lot of Black people doing anything. Like, it's basically, I was like the star Black child that's like singing and doing something. So like, as soon as I just put myself, you know, exposed myself in that way, I immediately drew a lot of attention from the, you know, the non-Black audience of the Hudson area. And so, you know, it was, I feel like that's kind of what happened. It just kind of like, I thought of an idea and people just reacted so quickly and so well to it that it just kept going. Like, I never thought that I was going to pursue music, actually. Like, I knew I wanted to be a performing artist somehow, but maybe just like a background thing, like a dancer or like something like that. But I never knew that like me just writing poetry and writing songs would turn into like, oh, like I'm getting asked to do a show here, or asked to feature here, or asked to do this here. And like, so I just been honestly going with it since that day. Like, I just been going with that energy since. Yeah.
Well, and also I think, maybe from the outside, I know that you're two sisters are like a huge part of your project, so it's also cool that you could be like, hey guys, sing this part like at the house, you know, and like hear it together. And like, you imagine that you're able to create really organically because your collaborators, your bandmates are like right there, you know, like,
right?
That's dope.
Yeah, no, it's when it started, it was musicians coming to me interested in working with me. And it was not family at first. Like, maybe my brother paid a little percussion.
Okay.
But I used to just sing myself. And like, if I recorded anything, I would do all the backups and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I had a lot of really bad experiences kind of being on my own. Like, you know, I was young and naive. Like, and I was working with people like twice my age. So, you know, they had a way of like trying to tell me what I'm doing wrong, what I'm doing right, like kind of controlling me a little bit. Because I was just very naive when I started. And so so I feel like that's the reason why I incorporated more family, because I felt like I didn't feel safe doing it by myself. Like, I felt like I needed somebody to back me up if somebody going to come over here and try to, you know, tell me what I need to do or how I'm doing it. And I wanted it to be more fun. I wanted it to be, like that family vibes experience like that I grew up with. And so that kind of came to me as with an intention, probably later on, like in the third trial of like reestablishing Lady Mutiny Eclipse. Like, I had to go through
different incarnations of it
when I started.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when I started in Brooklyn, that's when I incorporated my sisters.
Okay.
Which was around the time I met you.
Yeah.
13.
That's when it really gelled. It's interesting because me and Uni are like jazz school girls, like we did that journey toward like along our creativity, right? And I feel like I don't want to speak for you, Uni, but I did have like organic moments, like my mom loves music and we connected musically and all, but definitely came through in like a culture of teachers and like mentors and an instruction in art, like and within the institution. And I feel like that has informed the way in which I create. And just today, I was just meditating on how, like, I don't want to create like that anymore. Like, since I was 10 years old, I've been rehearsing for the recital, you know what I mean? And like, or for the talent show or for this production. And like, I feel like that has, it's still good. Like, I'm not trying to talk down about the art that I've made and the things that I've done, but I do desire a more connected way of creativity so that the art itself will reflect that. Like, Uni, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yes, I know exactly what you're saying. I'm echoing exactly what you said. Yes, thankful for the education that we've gotten, because not everyone has the privilege to do that. And there's a lot that you learn, and there's also a high standard that can be weighed on you when you go through that route. So it's kind of like learning and then unlearning.
Yes.
You know, and and going back to the source of what brought you to the music to begin with.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times we talk about it on this podcast all the time is the institutional struggles that we've dealt with up to this point and breaking that and moving against that. I mean, yeah. that's really what Trill is, mm-hmm. essentially, to make Jazz Trill again for our community of people that have felt that stronghold mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I totally agree. And it's only been up until recently for myself as well, where I'm like fighting against that, breaking against that, because what is attached to institutionalisms is racism, is
hierarchy.
Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't see a lot of women in a lot of places. So I say all that to say yes, Mel. That's
yeah.
That comes with that,
and I'm seeing how I'm so happy for you, Gunda. You didn't get poisoned by that, and you. So the art that you make is like you're on everybody's mood board. Like you know what I mean? Like because.
Well, the thing is, hold on a second, because I did get poisoned by it in a way, because the same way that you guys are expressing that construct and way of like just a way of like yeah institutionalizing a way of scripting what should be just free flowing, you know, like mm-hmm. I feel like the musicians that I was working with, they had that mentality,
right?
So like there was always this like butting of heads, because I'm just kind of like trying to free flow and just like let's just create what with the energy and what we're feeling, right. And they're kind of just like oh I need the chords and I need
right.
the time.
What
and I need the
right.
theory mm-hmm. For it that's like written and controlled. And yeah. I'm just like, so I actually did go to music school because I felt like maybe if I do this, I will be respected more. Like
okay.
maybe I need to like learn this language so that I can, you know, have a better relationship with these musicians. Mm-hmm. But then when I went to school, I was stressed. I was good. And I understand and I respect it like the same way you guys say respect it. Like, mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, when they talk about the history and the root of where it's all coming from, and they say these scriptures or musical chords and our written content is actually written on scribes. Mm-hmm. And we know scribes can only grow in the hot climate. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, that actually gave me some sort of like peace, because I was like, okay, this is really rooted from my people.
Yeah.
So I don't have to feel this like frustration because all I'm seeing are these European men and, you know, kind of like dominating how this music is created and
yeah.
written. And it's like, that was always like an issue for me, because it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, we literally spent like a whole semester on one guy, there was never a point where they tell you exactly who the teachers were, like who was his teachers, like mm-hmm. where did he, you said he studied in Italy, right? So like we know Italy around that time was colonized by the Moor.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit more about that and let me yeah. feel a little bit more relatable to the way that what you're teaching me so that I can. You know, because I do believe that being able to write music like poetry, you know, being able to write, you know, a score like you're writing a poem, I love that. I think that's beautiful. But I feel like, you know, when they teach it to you and it's not your people representing it, it kind of like frustrates you. And I feel like that yeah. when I went to school to study music, it was very frustrating for me. Like,
yeah.
So I was like, yeah, I did 3.5 years and my father passed away and he came with a very strong energy of like, go back to your old ways, like go back to the way you were doing it, incorporate more family, you know, and yes, you have the theory now, you know it, you understand it, but like, mm-hmm. make sure you're still connecting with the free flowing, the family, the, you know, don't get too caught up in that style. And
yeah.
So, you know, I'm sure both are being mixed up a little bit now
yeah.
more,
yeah.
But you know, I do feel like the free flowing mm-hmm. kind of, you know, audio, what is it? Auditory flow. I like that style. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like, I like a boom bat and a peep pop. Like,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that people, the listeners, receive that better. Mm. You know what I mean? And so I think if we remember that and just allow our true expression to flow, that we should, you know, be okay. I think, you know, one of the reasons why we did this episode today, that we scheduled this conversation, is because you're going to be performing at Sultan Room in 2 weeks. Is it 2 weeks? In a week?
I think so. Wait.
On the
March, yeah. March 21st.
March 21st.
Yeah, it's about a little under 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I feel like Lady Moon and the Eclipse is such a... I remember when you guys were doing a lot of your performances before the pandemic, when you were hosting like different... what were you guys calling them?
We were doing like these... the gospel?
The gospel, yes. And it was an incredible curation where you would have some of the dopest bands... local bands, usually in the New York tri-state area. And then you guys would also perform. It would happen at really different cool venues around New York. That's what, before the pandemic, there was a liveliness in the city. And and I, when I think about that time, what year would you say, years would you say that was?
Like between year, that was like between 2000, it was like 2016-17.
For the 15, people
16-17, around that time, yeah.
For the people who are listening, can you like remind us, like, who are some of the artists that you guys featured on the gospel?
We had comedians, DJs, musicians, dancers. It was like the gospel is all about sharing the constellation of art. Like, it's not just one thing. Like, we
I like that. Is that the name of the episode? These... The Constellation of Art?
Yes.
Come on, Gunda.
Because that's what it is. It's like, we are a constellation of art. Like, it's so, the art is so beautiful, so diverse. And it was just an opportunity to experience it all together. And that also included that, like, vendors, like visual artists and like designers, you know. It was like everybody was included in this experience, and that was the gospel. Like, let's talk about it. Like, you know, let's be in this experience of truth. Like, this is the truth. This is what, you know, made Soho what it is. Like, you know, this is what makes Hudson what it is right now. It's like the art first coming through, and then that attracts all the energy, all the souls, all the, you know. And so that's kind of what the gospel was about. And so, yeah, we had artists like, you know, Oshun, we had JoJo Abbott, we had my brother Young Paris, we had Kalan the Lost Tribe, we had Sydney Washington, she's a comedian now that blew up. There's just so many people we worked at different times. And it was a lot.
I did a gospel.
Didn't we I? Did?
Charles, yeah. Absolutely. Like, I can't even remember all of it. Like, we have all of it archived.
Yes.
But yeah, it was really a time where it was like right before Instagram became the center space for like people showing and featuring art. Like, Instagram was there, but Instagram was like kind of like a side thing. Like, people were still kind of engaging in community in real life, you know.
Yeah.
And Instagram started to become that space of like, let me engage with community here on this like computer.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, and it kind of like became like the space to kind of feature your art, share your art, and, you know, just kind of exist. And
yeah.
So it took away from that a little bit, but I know people really want it. People want to come together and make things real. But yeah, and I think what happened was like Instagram became such a bigger tool that, which was great because so many artists just like blew up on Instagram. Like, they really were able to expose themselves to such a wider audience beyond their own city. And so I think that's great. I think that's wonderful. And that was very necessary. But you know, when you blow up, you kind of in another headspace, you know?
Yeah.
I mean? For everyone.
Yeah.
For some people, it's like they become a little different when they,
when certain types of success,
right. It's difficult. Instagram is hard. It really challenges it. It can mess you up.
It is. Yeah. It's like you got to tread lightly, but also use it to your advantage and also protect yourself from it at the same time.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the gospel and the events and the eclipse season tours and like all of those things that you guys were doing around that time sent out waves into the creative community and the art community. And like years later, like I see glimpses of what you guys have done in so many different artists and different types of curations and stuff. And so for me, I feel very passionate of like, we have to do what we have to do as an MJTA and all of the listeners to really show up for you and what you're bringing to New York and to Philly and to all of the other states. Cause like you guys are the core of like all like Afro punk, like all of these.
No, listen, like it was crazy. Like, that's why we don't do the maquillage like we used to, because like at that Afro punk that blew up, like the one that you right before the one that like right before it became this like big corporate thing and we performed and everything, I feel like we did the maquillage. I swear we probably painted like at least 200-300 faces, like, and that it was so photographed, like everybody was walking around with this face paint and it just went everywhere. Like, it just became such a major thing that like it spread so much, and like so many people started doing it and having a business of it and all these things. We were seeing music videos, everything was like, it was very much like copy and paste, and we're like, oh, those are our designs, like those are our creations. And you know, even my brother, he was actually signed with Roc Nation at the time, so you know, he was like at, you know, Jay-Z's brunch, you know, Grammy brunch, like
with his maquillage.
He was very much associated with, and you know, one of Solange and their really good friends, who is the A&R for Jay-Z that signed my brother, she was at our 30th birthday slumber party, you know what I mean? So it's like we were just very close to that, so I could see how like there was just a lot of inspiration, you know, like you said, the mood board was like, oh, this family is like really bringing something that, you know, we haven't experienced. And even if we have experienced this traditional African way with the dots, that's not like a new thing, but the way they're bringing it, it just makes it something that can be maybe more approachable to the masses.
Yeah.
So just the vibe, oh, the celestial perspectives and way of thinking and the moon and all that stuff, it's like, you know, this is very like much what we need in the world. So in a way, it's kind of like we're all okay with it going like super mainstream, and a lot of these big artists being inspired by it, because I do think it was necessary to get that far. And we're just not a family that, like, yes, we like to do art, we like to create, but we're not doing it for
accolades
and rich, like, we're, you know, I like to get paid for what I'm doing, but my intention isn't to, you know, be this big super big thing, like, you know, I'm just doing it because this is my art, like, this is my way of creating, this is all I know, like, I'm
literally
just creative, you know.
You're just being yourself.
I feel like if it's offering medicine and healing to people and inspiration, then that is a good role that I can play in the world to help other people, like, you know, I just feel like that, you know. But you know, and if people are inspired by it and it allows them to, you know, be in a consciousness or shift into a way that's better for them, then I also think that's just what I'm here for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I've learned that through that experience. Cause at first I was like,
that
performance looks just like
my Yes. That
I was like, hold on a second. Mm-hmm. It's a little too copy and paste.
It
didn't bother me, cause it's like, wow, people really do take your art.
I mean, I think
we'll take it.
That's just normal, you know.
Right, you know that.
Well, yes, and it's still a hard pill to swallow, but I think that like the role of like critics and like writers and like historians is to constantly raise awareness to the originators of things. Like, it's easy to talk about the people that blew up and who we easily associate with that, but like, that's why I'm so passionate about like us like really supporting you, Gunda, and your family and Lady Moon Eclipse and all of it, so that people know when they see that Afropunk really where, you know, what was the beginning of the fire of that aesthetic, or, you know, the Solange aesthetic, the all of that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that Afropunk and Solange and all these people, we all have our creativity flowing, right, and there's so much going on in the world, but like, it really is important to see where things are drawn from. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like that.
I mean, it's very much giving Afrofuturism,
right?
Sun Ra,
right?
And all of those things that it seems like, sounds like you grew up with that in your house as as a teaching, as the culture that your father instilled. So it's just part of you, and you're just expressing that. It's not like you, it was an influence, what you've seen and what you heard. It's just in your blood.
It's just in you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's actually no influences, and like a lot of people were telling me like, oh, you remind me of Sun Ra, you remind me of Sun Ra, you remind me of Earth, Wind, and Fire, and like they'll say all these names, and I did grow up listening to Earth, Wind, and Fire, but I actually didn't know anything about Sun Ra until after the fact, and then I learned of him, and I was like, oh, I could see that, and actually, I feel like that's the time we're in right now. I feel like we're in that expansive time of being a little bit more beyond, you know, this just physical construct. Like, actually, we should be tapping into the sun and moon a little more. Like, these are our parents as well. Like, you know, so I could see how this is just the time that we're in. So to me, it's a benefit to society for more people to be channeling in that more celestial way.
Yeah.
And so for me, I just feel like if I can be an inspiration that turns that light, that sparks that in people, then that's what, you know, I feel like that's what I'm here for. It's just to inspire people to bring more of that than to not have it, because I think it's important. And like, I've actually learned a lot about these other celestial artists after the fact. Like, I was okay, I can see that.
I've always known that this is just pure to you, because you, I feel like you also, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, create out of a space of what is needed. So like you make your own costumes. Like y'all gotta wear some on stage.
Right.
Like we're not gonna be Babylon. You're not gonna go to the store to be buying
anything
clothes like
at
that.
These stores that's just gonna fit right. Like, so I just, you don't like see the vision when I go to a store. I don't see it.
So you make it yourself. So
I have to make it.
How stunning, how beautiful. I've been blessed that you've made me pieces that I've loved and that were really special moments for me and my outward expression. I think because you have always understood the importance of, yes, it's spirit, it's ears, it's sound, but it's also visually, what are we looking at? What are we experiencing? What is the story that is being told here? I think about like the Sagrada, you know, the Sagrada Familia in Spain. That Gaudi church, that big church that he built. And it's so beautiful. And everywhere I feel like I've mentioned this before in this podcast, everywhere you look, it's just like beauty. And like the whole intention is to like show the grandeur and the greatness of God by all of this like beautiful things, you know? And I feel like that's also part of your artistry, is like beautification and like femininity and love and light. And like it instantly, when we see you on the screen, when we experience you live, you know, like it just like comes over us and we just suddenly like settle into a peaceful state, a more inquisitive state of like what could be, you know? So I think that's also a really dope part of your full expression.
Thank you for seeing me, Melanie Charles.
Yeah.
I feel like you always been that, that like cheerleader and coach on the side. Like, Cal, you are just, you're doing it out here. Like you've always been like such a light and such a like, I see you, like you always letting me know that I see you. I see what's going on. Like I see you, you know, that's so important for an artist because, you know, especially like for someone that I respect, you know, and love and care about really deeply, like to really see you and like to not forget you, you know, we go through so many journeys with people that just, you know, they come and go, but to still have someone that actually like acknowledges you and respects you and still sees you, like
Brenda.
That's like a whole chunk of gold. Like,
yes, that's even more important than like your regular audience and people. Yes, we right. want people to come to your shows and listen to your music, but when you have somebody that really sees you like that, yeah. that supports you, and that's what really feeds your soul, like the yeah. the people that are close to you and your friends.
Yeah.
It's special.
I think we've been able to really see each other because we both have dealings with family members with mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And we've both been very like involved and like in that journey. And I feel like that kind of teaches you to like see people, because yeah. when you have schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, you might appear to be like problematic and crazy and wild. But if you take the time to see the person, you see, no, there's another thing going on in there. That yeah. person ain't, you know, fully, you know what I mean? So yeah. it's definitely been a tough journey. I don't know if you're comfortable talking about it. My whole thing about advocacy and mental health stuff is that, like, if we can normalize it and just talk about it, like we talk about, oh, I'm allergic to this or I'm allergic to that. Oh, I have schizophrenia or my brother is dealing with that. I feel like that's another step in, like, figure out how to figure out this problem.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
No pressure. Really, but
and to life, live a normal no, life, for not, them to live a normal pressure. Life.
I would love to have the support and the platform to talk about that, because, and even recent, my brother's first of all been in a pure manic state for 4 months now. And it's been like, as a family member, you're basically like, even my voice, you hear like, you really are like, it's overwhelming. It's like an overwhelming feeling, yeah. even if you're still able to function in life and do your own thing, to constantly be like in the not knowing and in the fear and like not, and just praying for your brother, just hoping he's okay, hoping he's all right. Knowing his true heart and knowing how peaceful mm-hmm. and loving and talented he is. And then that he's not even able to access that right now because he's just in such a manic state that is often triggered by society. Mm-hmm. And what yeah. society has to offer, especially these Black men.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's heartbreaking and it's overwhelming for the body and soul.
Yeah.
And so for me, I wish there was a platform to help people, just family also.
Yes.
You know, because this is a traumatic experience for us too.
Yeah.
We mm-hmm. cannot settle. We have no peace when our yeah. relative is not peaceful.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's the support for the family, but also the proper sustainable support for the you know, the case.
Yes.
And you know, if you don't have, you know, the wealth, you know, then you don't have a real sustainable approach.
Yeah.
You know, my brother, he is, you know what, the only thing they really have to offer him is like, you know, a needle, a jab in the arm that can,
yeah.
the medication that fuels to his system for a month. Like, that's kind of like all he has with the funds that our family and that he has with his insurance. Like,
yeah.
And it's just so unfortunate that people who don't have, like as Black people, first of all, like we need to really advocate for this reparations, because we shouldn't even be worrying about healthcare.
Yeah.
We shouldn't even be
exactly.
We shouldn't even be having the thought of, like, you know, trying to heal ourselves. And then not yeah. only that, but healing ourselves in a very controlled, institutionalized way where it's like there's no real true sustainable alternatives but this like medical system, like this
yeah.
drug filled
yeah.
system and these high insurance company business, you know, exchanges. And it's like, it's just so corrupt and there's just no real sustainable approach there. And it really is, it's a heartbreaking thing for not only the mental case, the family member that's dealing with this
yeah.
state, but the family yeah. that has to support it. Like,
it's very traumatic. I mean, you speak about like money, even if you even people who are rich, it's the same medication. It's the same. Right. It's like we're just delayed with right. like the resources. And also we need to speak more, like the families of people going through this, like there needs to be some right. kind of like union or something.
Of course. But and then that's even people that have family. There's people that we see every day on the streets
that don't have anyone
on the subways and have no one, and they end up homeless, and then they end up either getting killed or hurting someone or hurting themselves. And mm-hmm. it's just this vicious cycle that goes all the way down from the food that we eat to how the food is treated to the chemicals chemicals that are put in our medicines and whatever the money that fuels these institutions of that yeah. are the health insurance companies to the doctors to then you're in this helpless cycle.
Right.
What do I even do? And then on top of that, you're Black. So it's like, here we are.
I did do some research though, and I did find because I did access like some like wealthy white friends that I have. I'm just gonna keep it real, and they did give me a lot of resources for holistic approaches.
Okay,
that are residential, where you can live out in the countryside in a really nice looking house.
Okay,
and you got your own room, and you got yoga, and you got all kinds of holistic. You know, kind of work practices, meals 3 times a day. Mm-hmm. You know, they do medical detox. They do like a detox program, especially if you've been consuming a lot of, substance to kind of self-manage. Mm-hmm. And they do like detoxing programs, and you can live up to a year in that place. And some of them even help. They do outpatient work where they help you get a job, and you know they help keep up with you. And they kind of like. Approach it where you are no longer on the medicine, and then you have this relationship now with this institute and this other home kind of space holistic approach, and where you are just like a new place you can go to, and that does exist, and I found an abundance of that.
Wow.
The only thing is that most of them do not accept your regular degular insurance.
Right.
Most of them don't even accept, and some of them don't even accept insurance at all.
Yeah.
So you gotta just pay out the pocket. That's like $42K.
Yeah.
That's like $5,000 a month, you know.
Oof.
So you know, that's what I'm saying. Like it's like, yeah, they figured out their, you know, they figured out how to take care of their own. But then when it comes to like us, you know, it's like
it's non-existent.
Our options are very limited to, you know, the system. So mm-hmm. But you know, and we should talk about that because I think, I'm really in the energy of reparations. I'm in the energy of reparations, and I feel like I'm okay with making the people that you know are living a very, you know, the white people, you know, and their ancestors, you know, I think they need to be held a little bit more accountable.
Yeah,
and they need to step up a little more. And like a lot of their, you know, they'll have like a, you know, they'll come and colonize a city and have their boutiques and their, you know, their shops and their clothing shops and all this stuff. And they have, you know, these trusts and these, you know, ways of just having businesses that nobody go into that they could still afford. It's like, y'all could also invest a little bit of your time and energy to, you know, the reparations for the people that you kind of exile out of this little city that y'all took over.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like. I feel like that should be held accountable a little bit. Like,
agree.
You know what I mean? Like, I know we know we're kind of just trying to get by. We're trying to just survive in life. You know, it's a lot of time and energy to kind of, you know, do a movement to, you know, hold these people accountable, these, you know, gentrifiers accountable, whatever. But I do think that, you know, the more we have stepping up to support our needs as Black people, the closer we're going to get to, you know, having access to that, you know, in a more sustainable way.
It's galvanizing and coming together to demand that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we kind of have to demand it. So,
yeah. I've been thinking about that a lot lately about like all the issues that are going on and how everyone's like, well, you have to do something. And then when they talk about doing something, they most of the time they mean you have to make a Twitter post or make an Instagram post. That's really the extent that people go with.
That is not doing anything.
And I'm like, y'all, okay.
Yeah,
and there's a small percentage of people who are like, no, we have to like write to the Senate and we have to like really like work on the legislation, which I agree. And we should be doing that. But I also imagine like we need to go back to like how the Black Panthers had an organization that was driven by the people for the people and find a way to then be use that as a mouthpiece to communicate to the Senate collectively like this is what we need, you know, instead of like individuals.
So the voice is more powerful.
You know what I mean? And, and just have a clarity of what it is we're looking for. But how do you do that? Like, that just sounds like a really big feat. And like, it's like I'm dreaming. Because we can have these conversations all the time. What is really going to change?
Well, so I had this idea. I thought of this idea of it's really simple, but you know, because I don't feel like I have the capacity to like even be a part of a movement, like, you know, but unless it was like designed in a way that like I feel like I can access it better.
Mm-hmm.
But something that I would be interested in doing that I feel like could be like a cool movement that happens is anyone who got a Black Lives Matter sign on their door or window or grass, like I feel like I want to go up to their house and be like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing for Black lives? Like, what are you doing to make their lives matter? Mm-hmm. You know, and just like literally going up to them and just asking them, putting a little bit of the heat and the pressure, you know, because even though, yes, we can get together as I think that is beneficial to get to unify as a people that are needing these demands and, you know, going to the house and the representatives and, you know, but sometimes they kind of don't really hear you unless you have a lot more white people on your side. Like, if you got like a larger group of like real everyday middle class, high class, whatever, white people that are also right by you saying, yeah, we need to make these changes, then I think that's when you're as Black people as even unified are considered more, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's just my thought. But I feel like I definitely want to be challenging like real everyday people that, you know, I see you got a sign. I'm walking up the street in my city, and anybody who got a sign, I want to ask you, like, what are you doing? You know, because that's that movement. Yeah, it's been co-opted, but that's the real thing that we're still dealing with. You know, like, can you tell me like what you're actually doing and what are you going to continue to do to that's on a consistency to help make this a reality? You know, and not just like a funding bank. Like, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like one thing that would help with that too is when you go up to them and say, what are you doing? If they don't have an answer, offering like, well, you know what you could do.
Mm. Right.
Right. Yeah. Right. Have something. Here, this is what you can do.
This would be an interesting TV series. This would be an interesting reality show. Yeah. That would be dope. You know, just like document like opening up that conversation. Right. It's very interesting content. Yes.
Black people, are you hiring? How many Black people are you giving a position to make decisions? That just, the whole thing is like, well, Black people have to be placed in places where they can make decisions.
Yeah.
Where we can make decisions that can help the community, that can put us in better situations that we're in, that will give us access. One thing that I've really been thinking about a lot in the past year is when I think about arts institutions, performing arts institutions in particular, and where it's all about where the money comes from. And a lot of the money come from white folks. So then you still see their programming looking a certain way, still just like, oh, it looks like they're just trying to check off boxes.
Mm.
And when you see that happen many times, it's because the money is white. There might be some folks in there that are Black, that are like on the programming team or on whatever, helping to get the work done. But when it comes to like being on the board members and the people that like development departments are trying to please when it comes to getting their money, they're not, I feel like they're not targeting Black people. Because you have, when the money is cut, but then it's like, it has to be balanced somehow because, you know, we don't have a lot of money. So, I don't know. It's just something that I've been really thinking about. And we have to also put our money in our own communities where the change is being made too, because in nonprofit in particular, the institutions are looking to please the people that have the money.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. But we can have the money if you give us some.
Exactly. So it's like this cycle, right? Because they also fund artists to create their art.
Okay. Well, and I feel like every time we have these conversations, I must say, I feel by the end of them, I feel hopeless, you know, because it always feels so big. But I think that what all we can do is continue the conversations, continue to make the art that we make, continue to do the healing. I'll never forget, Gunda, your baby daddy told me when I first met him that a great performance or great music is supposed to changes the molecular structure of your brain. He told me that when I first met him, and I never forgot about that. And it made it shined light on how, yes, what we do is very powerful, because we can inspire people to think different and be like, why do I do this that way? Let me try something else. So shout out to Ken. I call him your baby daddy, but he also your husband and partner, incredible person that has been by your side in your creative journey. So shout out to Ken for that.
I will say that every episode we do a little trail trivia. And I do have one. Are you down to play a little bit? A little bit of trivia?
Yeah, sure. I'll try a little bit.
I got one question. So we've been talking a lot about
your hands.
You warm up your hands. It is one question though, so it's either one or none.
Okay.
But we've been talking a lot about celestial artists, and one artist that came to mind that the spirit that you bring is Nina Simone. So the chill trivia question is, what was Nina Simone's biggest hit? Was it A, Feeling Good, B, Mississippi Goddamn, C, I Put a Spell on You, or D, I Loves You Porgy?
Ooh. I'm going to guess. Mississippi Goddamn.
Oh, you're close. You're close.
Okay, before you invest.
Nope.
Really?
It was, and I'm feeling good. Really?
Oh, that yes.
Oh, my God. I just started learning that song.
That's really?
What?
That song was, that was the last song I thought of, though, because I feel like that was a little later in her career.
It was.
But
so you're talking about of all time. Are you talking about it's the biggest song of all time or at its time?
Of all time. Of her whole career.
Okay.
Of her whole career. Okay, yeah. Okay, I can see.
That was a hard one.
I thought you meant like what was the song that put her on?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like.
Sorry, her biggest hit of all time.
Oh, of all time. I misunderstood that question.
Because I'm Feeling Good is on every commercial now. It's everywhere.
That's definitely the biggest song of all time.
Okay.
Mississippi Goddamn.
I misunderstood the question.
Mississippi Goddamn was number three, though.
Oh, it was number three?
Mm-hmm.
So number one was Feeling Good. Number two was...
I Loves You, Porgy.
Okay, it was I Love You, Porgy. Okay, and number three was...
Mississippi
Goddamn. And number four was...
I Put a Spell on You.
When I felt that song, that was like a hit for me. I used to play that song over and over and over again.
Yeah.
I thought it was such a powerful song. And at the time that she did it, I thought that was a little earlier in her career.
Yeah.
So I just really felt like, you know.
I feel like Mississippi Goddamn was probably hot, like, huge at the time when
at
she released
time,
it
right at that
but
time.
I imagine I'm Feeling Good probably blew up more later on.
It's like steeped
good
in so much new
best are more like universal, like they're they're it's something everybody can relate to, whereas Mississippi Goddamn, it's like, ooh, this is a powerful, you know, message that she's sending, but it's like, well, we don't want to keep that message.
Yeah, it's a little too woke.
A little too woke. Yes, we don't want to keep that. That's it. Not going to be the universal one, you know. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, well, that concludes our chill trivia. Thank you, Uni, for it. That was a hard one. Okay.
I know. That was a good one. And happy birthday, Melanie.
Thank you.
Today's your birthday. Oh, my God. What a beautiful way to, like, celebrate with you.
Thank you.
With this podcast and talk about Nina Simone, who's also a Pisces.
Oh, that's right. She is a Pisces.
Yes.
When's her birthday?
I was like, wait, did they intentionally do this? Because, like, she's a Pisces and she's been... You know,
February
20th of her every Pisces season.
February
21st.
Okay, Gunda, you know the children. Gunda knows some jazz facts now.
Yeah,
okay. I'm there with the jazz.
Listen, I got a feeling.
Charles level jazz though. I'm not knowing Charles level jazz.
Nah, we all out here.
Jazz or feel.
That's crazy.
I love it.
I was getting Nina Simone vibes too, so that's perfect.
Well, the spirit of Nina is with us on today's episode. Mm-hmm. I think that this is a really good time to wrap it. Yeah. I hope that we have the last 10 minutes of your part, Gunda, because the thing was telling me that your recording is done. We're going to pray that it's still recording somewhere on one of our computers.
I have a recording light on my screen that I can see, but I don't know.
Okay, good. Okay.
Yeah, so do I.
Okay, so, you know, we're praying for the best.
Okay.
Because I need the people to hear this episode. This was so much fun talking with you and, like, hearing more about your evolution. And really, I can't stress it enough. We need the people to come through. You'll be at Salton Room on the 21st of this month. And then you're going to be in Philadelphia. What's the date for Philly? 28th?
Yeah, Thursday
the 28th. What are other cities that you're going to be hitting on this leg?
So yeah, we'll be in Hudson, New York. We'll be in Ellenville, New York, which is like the Catskills.
Nice.
We'll be in Northampton at the Marigold Theater. And we'll be in Suffolk. I'm sorry.
Suffolk, Massachusetts. Okay.
Foundry, and then we'll be in Vermont at the Higher Ground.
Nice.
And for the total solar eclipse, so we're actually going to be experiencing the actual solar eclipse. There will be a total eclipse in Vermont, and then we're throwing a eclipse after party.
Ooh.
So after people experience the eclipse, they're going to come, and we're just going to do a big celebration, performing. Nice. And in Vermont, in Burlington, Vermont, and that will end our eclipse season tour.
That's ooh, beautiful. That sounds so.
It starts in Brooklyn.
It starts in Brooklyn.
Yes, right.
Yes. And we have the equinox weekend, y'all. This is the most celestial thing you're going to get.
Ooh, I love it. Are you guys going to do my favorite song, Stargazing?
Yes,
do. Y'all, yes, you do not want to miss this.
Yeah, I'm excited. I haven't seen you live before. Both Zacchaeus Paul and I are going to be hosting the Salton Room. And I'm so happy you shared all of your tour stops, because we have listeners everywhere.
Yes.
So not just in New York.
That's right.
Yeah.
So everyone make
sure. It's going to be really great. Like, I'm glad we started pushing this early, because, you know, people are buying tickets. Like, you know, I feel like it's going to be a very successful tour.
Yes,
because we started early.
Yes, Ashe,
not doing that.
That's right. It's going to be packed in every city. Yeah. All the people going to come through.
Yes,
they're going to tell their friends, and it's going to be beautiful. Thank you so much, Gunda, for making time. This was a last minute organization. We made it work, so thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
we do practice my heart. Okay,
I'm do my eyes.
I can't.
The youth be doing it like this. I don't know.
What's wrong with me?
The youth does it like, I don't even know.
The youth? The young people, you mean?
They do it in a way that it looks like a kid.
They know how to do all that.
We sound like three aunties right now. Okay, so before we go, Gunda, we usually do a sign off.
Okay.
And we usually say, I say, whatever you do, and then you say, remember to. Mm. And then together we say, make Jazz Chill again.
Okay.
Are you down for that?
Yes. I'll try to remember what I gotta say. Okay.
We're gonna make sure we put the link to the tour dates and everything at this episode so people can tap in. Thank you everyone for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Once again, my name is Melanie Charles, signing off, and also my co-host, Yunimo. Thank you so much, Lady Moon. And whatever you do,
always remember to
make that true again. Yes.